A CEO sits in her corner office, staring at 17 browser tabs and 43 unread Slack messages. Her calendar shows back-to-back meetings until 6 p.m. She can't remember the last time she felt truly present, not performing, not managing, just here. This isn't burnout. It's something deeper, a complete loss of clarity about what matters and why. We've built a world that rewards constant motion while punishing reflection, that celebrates productivity while dismissing presence. But what if the answer isn't working smarter or faster? What if it's learning to see clearly again? Every moment of your life, your brain is writing fiction, not deliberately. It's just how we're wired. Something happens, and instantly we wrap it in narrative. Your colleague doesn't respond to your email. Within seconds, you've constructed an entire storyline. They're angry, they don't respect you, you've done something wrong. Same event, infinite possible stories. This process follows what researchers call the ladder of inference. We observe something, select which details to notice, add meaning based on our past, draw conclusions, adopt beliefs, and take action, all in milliseconds. The dangerous part? Each rung reinforces the ones below it. If you believe someone dislikes you, you'll unconsciously select evidence that confirms it. Their neutral expression becomes a glare. Their silence becomes hostility. Your subjective interpretation hardens into objective reality. Workplace conflicts reveal how stories shape perception. One manager sees questions as incompetence. Another sees curiosity. Same behavior, opposite narratives. We construct limiting identities. I'm terrible with money. I'm not creative. These become self-fulfilling prophecies that prevent growth. The practice isn't stopping storytelling. Humans need narrative. It's holding stories lightly. Try, the story I'm telling myself is. This creates space to question your interpretation. Maybe your colleague didn't respond because they're overwhelmed, not angry. Your inner critic constantly scans threats and highlights failures. When the Dalai Lama encountered Western self-loathing, he was puzzled. Tibetan has no equivalent word. This self-criticism is learned, not inevitable. Self-compassion offers an alternative, treating yourself with the kindness you'd offer a struggling friend. When facing criticism or mistakes, try three strategies. First, shift attention to breath or surroundings. Second, reframe cognitively. View criticism as feedback. Imagine how insignificant this will seem later. Third, accept discomfort fully, understanding all feelings are temporary. The story I'm telling myself helps identify limiting beliefs masquerading as facts. Then comes the crucial step. The story I want to live by is. You're choosing narratives that serve growth rather than limit it. Most of us think we're good listeners. We're not. We're waiting for our turn to talk. Real listening operates on three levels: content, the literal message, feelings, the tight jaw, wavering voice, and identity, deeper concerns about competence, belonging, or worth. When your partner says, "I need you home by 6," you might hear the time, but miss the unspoken messages about trust or feeling valued. Frank, an airport operations manager, was reported for emotional outbursts and poor listening. The real issue? He was leading with anxiety, so consumed by worry about making mistakes that he couldn't be present with his team. His inner dialogue drowned out the actual humans in front of him. Improving listening starts with temporarily forgetting roles. Set aside the boss-employee dynamic, the parent-child hierarchy, see the person first. One powerful practice, clarity circles. Based on Quaker traditions, one person presents an issue while others listen deeply and ask clarifying questions without giving advice. The focus is curiosity over problem solving. Relationships tangle from fundamental attribution error, judging others by their actions while judging ourselves by our intentions. Someone cuts you off in traffic? They're reckless. You cut someone off? You were rushing to an important meeting. Marketing sees operations as inflexible bureaucrats. Operations sees marketing as unrealistic dreamers. Your brain evolved to keep you alive, not happy. It constantly scans for threats and maintains perpetual dissatisfaction, drives that helped our ancestors survive but now create unnecessary suffering. That colleague's feedback? Your brain treats it like a physical threat. Your comfortable life? Your brain insists something must be wrong. The antidote involves surprisingly simple practices. Ask yourself, what does it feel like in my body to be safe? Notice relaxed shoulders, steady breathing, an unclenched jaw. Catch yourself threat scanning unnecessarily, obsessing over a minor comment, anticipating criticism that hasn't happened. Explore, what does it feel like to be satisfied, to not need anything, even for a moment? This work happens in the stretch zone, that sweet spot between comfort and panic where growth occurs. Stay too comfortable and nothing changes. Push too far and you trigger fight, flight, freeze responses that shut down learning. Find that edge where you're challenged but not overwhelmed. Nobody likes accountability. We notice others' broken commitments while hoping our lapses go unnoticed. Yet properly implemented, accountability prevents disasters and builds trust. Traditional approaches focus solely on metrics, treating humans as productivity machines. Compassionate accountability holds people responsible not just for results, but for how we work together, celebrating successes, viewing mistakes as learning opportunities, and creating psychological safety where admitting errors early is encouraged. Google's Project Aristotle found psychological safety was the single most important factor in high-performing teams. Three ingredients created: cultivating self-awareness by calming your inner critic, planning for success by defining clear ground rules, and minding the gaps by acknowledging breakdowns and celebrating wins in real time. When relationships break down, clearings offer a structured path forward. One person expresses their positive intention, shares their perspective using I statements, acknowledges their contribution, and expresses hope. The listener hears without interrupting, then summarizes before switching roles. The goal isn't agreement, but respectful listening that transforms conflict into opportunity. This extends to creating shared visions that inspire rather than goals that merely measure. When employees embrace a company's vision, the company becomes our company, applying equally to families, where we cultivate values but rarely create formal vision statements that make the implicit explicit. Feeling powerless breeds cynicism, the belief that people only act from self-interest and change is impossible. This manifests as nothing ever changes or why bother trying. The antidote is engagement, shifting from who's at fault to what can we do. Avoidance perpetuates dysfunction through shirking responsibilities, false agreement followed by passive resistance, or refusing to fix inherited problems. Churchill's wartime leadership offers three strategies: refocus on purpose, foster cautious optimism while acknowledging reality, and refuse to sugarcoat. His blood, toil, tears, and sweat speech confronted brutal facts while maintaining hope. Be clear about expectations, feel emotions authentically without letting them control responses, and choose actions that serve the greater good. This doesn't eliminate breakdowns, that's impossible, but it transforms them into growth opportunities through honest dialogue and collaborative problem solving. Organizations that master this emerge stronger with more engaged teams. The goal isn't perfection, but resilience, developing the capacity to move through difficulty together with clarity and compassion. Clarity isn't a destination. It's a practice sustained through renewal, wholeheartedness, and gratitude. Renewal creates sacred spaces through micro-practices, like conscious breathing before meetings or feeling your feet while waiting in line, resetting your awareness and bringing spaciousness into daily life. Wholeheartedness addresses exhaustion that rest can't fix. As poet David White observed, the antidote to exhaustion isn't rest. The antidote to exhaustion is wholeheartedness. Depletion often signals disconnection from what matters. Reconnecting with purpose through revisiting values or bringing full presence to tasks energizes you beyond what sleep provides. Gratitude acknowledges impermanence without denying difficulty, practiced through journals, direct appreciation, or pausing to notice small gifts like sunlight or unexpected kindness. The Japanese concept of tombonkan describes someone carrying a board blocking their vision. Finding clarity means removing that board to see your potential and connection to something greater, offering concrete benefits, accelerated growth, deeper relationships, humane workplaces, and healing of divisions. Your authentic presence catalyzes change, transforming doubt into possibility. The world doesn't need more productivity, it needs more presence.